Good morning and welcome to episode 44 of the Jaguar Report podcast. My name is Gus Logue. I'm here with my co-host, Big Tuna. John, nice haircut. How are you doing?
Doing good, buddy. How are you doing? I mean, I was doing good before the Big Tuna. Doing slightly worse now, but still doing good nonetheless. How are you doing, buddy?
I'm doing all right. Just trying to enjoy the off season with like so little going on, like trying to enjoy the boredom a little bit. But
you watch anything good lately?
Gators baseball has been pretty good. They just set like a billion records last night.
Yeah.
And game three is tonight, so
game three.
This podcast comes out, they'll be
fans. Yeah. We'll see.
You've seen anything good?
Watch Mamma Mia, the movie.
Okay. Nice. Yeah. For the first time.
Yeah.
What, John? That's sick.
I don't know who the dad is.
The sequel's pretty good too, actually. I watched it in recent months.
That cost $3 on Amazon, so well, that's to be determined.
All right, that's fair.
It's not canon to me.
All right, well, let's get into it. Today, John and I are going to rank our top 10 receivers for the 2023 NFL season. On our last episode, we ranked top 10 quarterbacks, so you can check that out on all platforms and our YouTube page.
For the record, I am reigning champion.
Okay, yeah.
This is a results-based business.
Yeah, okay. We had a poll to see like whose top 10 was better on Twitter. And the last time I checked, it was like 75-25 in John's favor. Does that seem right? Did you check recently?
No, I'll give you 75-25. That seems
Oh, you'll give that to me?
Yeah.
You'll give me 5%.
That seems gentle.
All right. Well, yeah. Hopefully I was trying not to let subjectivity kind of
No. I followed the rules, and once again, I'm going to take the rules and turn them around on you.
Okay. All right. Well, for this week, we're not considering – or are we considering contracts? I wasn't really considering.
I'm just going 10 best receivers.
Yeah, 10 best receivers, like, for the next year straight up.
Let's do it.
Quarterbacks we did next 3 years, but this is just 2023. So, per John's house rules, we're going to go from number 10 to number 1. You want to start us off?
Yeah, number 10. Yeah, I kind of wish you were starting off now that I'm about to deliver it. But this is, you know, non-bias or anything. I'm going Calvin Ridley, man. Let's get spicy. Okay. I think he's going to – yeah, okay. I think he's going to have a great season, dude. Literally, the only thing I think that would stop him from having a good season is if he looked like too rusty from, like, years of moving the football and, like, he came back and was, like, injured and stuff like that. But he's looked great. And – I mean, Zay Jones and Christian Kirk just had career years last year, and I would take pre-2021 Ridley over both of them. And I think he's going to be better than most receivers this year. That's my stamp of approval. That's my hot take.
Okay. Well, yeah, I didn't have him in my top 10, even though I did have a hot take recently that was he's going to be top 3 in receptions, I think, or have over 100 receptions, one of those two. I'll have to go back into the archives for that. But so I'm with you that I think he's going to be awesome. And, like, I feel like I've seen a lot of stuff recently that's like, oh, him and Kirk are like 1A, 1B. Maybe I've been reading too many fantasy articles. But, like, I think you and I both expect it to be Calvin Ridley is a surefire number one. And then it's kind of everyone else for the Jaguars.
Yeah, I mean, even if you look at their roster, like, I would expect Trevor Lawrence. I mean, he threw almost 600 passes last year. I would expect that to, you know, pretty much be, you know, the same this year. And then last year, Marvin Jones had 81 targets. Zay Jones had 121. Christian Kirk had 133. So just insert Calvin Ridley in for all of Marvin Jones's 81. Then take a little bit away from Kirk, a little bit away from Jones. I mean, from Zay. And, I mean, that's a pretty healthy target share.
Yeah, I think
I'm not crazy. You're crazy.
We had talked before about how like it could like defer depending on the week, kind of like last year, like when Zane Engram, especially, I feel like even Kirk too had like spike weeks, and so like it would defer. But by the season end, like yeah, he's going to be pretty insane. And I agree with you that like injury is really the only thing I see preventing him from not meeting our expectations.
Can you get the hot take thing?
Yeah. All right. I'm ready.
Calvin Ridley will be a Pro Bowler. I'll take that one for me.
Okay.
Yeah.
Star.
Thank you for the accountability. Why you gotta put 2 stars?
Then I can see it when I look back at it.
Okay.
Come on, I got a system. We gotta stick to the system.
Okay.
All right, sticking to the system. My number 10 player is Terry McLaurin, which I also kind of like had wished that, or at least like we weren't starting 10-1, because like I kind of have an argument with him and then another player that I left out of my top 10. That was like kind of my snub.
That's so,
all right, well, I left CD Lamb out of my top 10.
Ooh.
I had Terry McLaurin over him just because, like, CD is probably, I don't know, not to discredit myself immediately, but, like, he's definitely, like, in that range of, like, talent-wise, but I think he just, like, benefits a little bit from scheme and, like, his quarterback and environment. And so, I think that, like, if we were doing, I guess, like, if it was an average team, like the exercise we did last week, I'd rather have Terry than CD. And I kind of just like am also just making a point because I think CD is, again, like in that range and a great receiver, but probably the most overrated receiver that's like a Pro Bowler in my mind.
You calling CD a slot merchant?
Yeah, I think I am.
Yeah, that's what it sounded like. It sounded like the polite way of saying he's slant boy.
Rather than just slants, but he's a little bit of a slant.
Yeah. All right. I'll hear it. So Terry for number 10. I mean, what separates Terry, you know, for you? And are you concerned at all that Jacoby Brissett is his team's best quarterback?
I'm not concerned. First of all, because Jacoby's okay, I guess. I can't even lie. He's fine. But yeah, I just think Terry's like more of an all around player. And I've got like some specialists, like Tyreek Hill isn't a great example, but like how Tyreek Hill, he's not the best all-around receiver, but he's got some like freaky traits. But I feel like Terry is like he's extremely fast, and so I guess that would be his trait, but he's mostly just like an all-around receiver that can win at any level and win inside and outside. So I feel like he's like the same tier as CD, but like the fact that he's more scheme versatile. And like I looked in the past 3 years since CD entered the league in 2020, Terry only has 3 fewer targets and 34 fewer yards. So like I guess technically that's a win in CD's book, but like they're pretty much neck and neck. And
yeah,
if it's like just one player versus another, like in a vacuum, I would like give a slight edge to Terry.
And CD's had much better quarterback play.
Yeah, like easily. And so
outside of Cooper Rush,
maybe there's a better way to separate it than targets and yards, but I don't know. He like the fact that he's had similar production on an objectively worse environment is kind of the point.
How close is Calvin Ridley to your top 10? Was he considered?
I wrote down like 8 other names that was like I was thinking about at the end of my list, and he wasn't one of them.
He was or wasn't?
Was not.
Okay.
Which is like,
not only did you not invite him to dance, he wasn't even allowed into the auditorium.
I guess he probably. Well, I kind of just forgot about him because my thing was like I was trying to do the same thing as last week, where like I think Trevor will end up being like the second best value, but like I just need to see slightly more. So like I need to see.
True.
Just like 1 week of him in a uniform before I like put him on like top 10 list.
True. You hate Jacksonville. That's fair. Yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
I think that like the whole thing about him like not seeing the field in 2 years has been like an overblown point, like as of now. But with that said, that's like kind of like what I'm using in my criteria for my list. Is that because it's been out for so long?
Like, you don't make any bad points that I can argue against with logic. So, number 9.
Yeah,
balls in your court.
Number 9. We're doing a little snake. I've got Jalen Waddle. Did he make your top 10?
Yeah, I'm doing the wall. Oh, is that
best celebration in the league? Honestly,
this is why you need to subscribe to YouTube. You can watch us. You know, attempt a waddle.
They were both probably sub-5s out of 10. That's how you watch.
Matt, dude, I thought Jalen Waddle was like amazing coming out of Alabama, and he's been like exactly like what, like, but that archetype of receiver, like pure speed guy, like that, like Henry Ruggs was supposed to be and John Ross was supposed to be. He's like the best hit like in the NFL in like a long time.
Yeah, like I don't know if you just said, but John Ross, like the list goes back like pretty far, and like just like the angle racer type of guy who's maybe not necessarily undersized, but just like has a smaller frame. But yeah, he's panned out and he's pretty electric. I think he set the league's rookie record for receptions. And then last year he was among the top of the league leaders in both like traditional and advanced statistics. So he's pretty legit. I think he'd be like still an alpha receiver without Tyreek Hill in Miami.
I can't disagree with you. That's why he's my number nine. I was really hoping.
So long.
I know. I was really hoping we could disagree. Debo was my number 11. Debo is the guy I leave off. But I mean, I love Waddle. I love his fit in that scheme. And I'm, you know, chicks dig the long ball, and you know, guys love the speed receiver. You know, that's as Babe Ruth once said.
Okay, yeah, I see no wrongs there.
Yeah, so I mean, there are some aspects of his game. Like his rookie year definitely was inflated by they just threw him a million like screen passes. But I think last year he showed that he can be just as dangerous as Tyreek Hill. And like literally, the only thing he has to do is probably stay healthy.
I mean, I think targets are a pretty underrated stat. Like he got 100 screen passes for a reason. So like, I get your point.
Fair enough. All right, I got number 8.
Yeah.
Your favorite receiver? Guess.
My favorite receiver?
Yeah. CD. You just raved about it. See, I get it. You know, I get, like you say, he's a slot merchant, but he's a really good one. And like, I feel like he's more than just like the, like, Michael Thomas was obviously good at his peak, but everybody knew he wasn't that good, and I think Lamb is probably better than like that. He's better than I think it's right. Like I think if Lamb was in Los Angeles, he puts up the Cooper Kupp numbers. No,
I think he gets like pretty close. I think he like leads the league in like a category, but maybe not three. Like Triple Crown is pretty insane.
Yeah, like he'll probably never be like the best receiver in the NFL, but I think for where he was drafted, like he was drafted what, the teens.
Yeah, that's the point I was about to make. Is like I feel like there was a ton of hype put onto him, and again, maybe I'm thinking too much, like with a fantasy lens. And like he's like met like where he was drafted because like he's objectively a top 12 receiver, and he was picked in the teens, like you said. And so I don't know, but like some people were acting like he was going to like walk out of the gates and be a top 5 receiver immediately, and I feel like he still isn't really like really close to that tier, even if he is a top 10 receiver.
That's true. I would never call him like a true like I think the next 7 guys I have, I think I would call like all true alpha receivers, and I think everybody else is on the outside of that, and I think he's like the best of that group. But I mean, I'd agree with you, you know, to an extent. But then again, you know, it was him, Jerry Jeudy, or Henry Ruggs, and LaVisca Chenault.
I had a buddy go to college at Auburn, so I always ask him for like insight from like Auburn and Alabama and stuff because he pays close attention to football there. And he said like when he was a fan at Auburn, easily the like scariest weapon that Alabama had was Jalen Waddle out of like Ruggs and Jeudy and Devontae Smith. And so that kind of translated to the league.
Fans sometimes you got to find the right one. Fans always like have a really good insight to their team, but like when it comes to like knowing, okay, who's the best, you know, out of these guys, fans are a good source, you know, to go to.
Yeah, the ones that have like been longtime fans and like have good, they know what they're looking at. Yeah
that's right. Right.
So well, my number 8, right?
Yeah, let's go. Number 8.
Debo at number 8.
Yeah, Debo.
I got Debo because he just like I was looking up a bunch of stats before to try to, I don't know, be a little bit more objective and not just go based on like the highlights that I remember, I guess.
Yeah.
He's like, I've certainly didn't watch any film for this, but
sure.
He just like popped up in a lot more like advanced receiver stats than I expected, like yards per route run. Like it's not like he's just like great at like being like, I don't know, a unicorn a little bit, but a gadget player. Like he's not just like a glorified gadget player in terms of like, oh, he can run out of the backfield and like, oh, he has like an awesome like missed tackle stats, but he's also like really good at actually like lining up outside and like delivering over the middle of the field. And so I think he's like a better all around player than a lot of people give him credit for. But he's also like arguably the funnest player in the league to watch, I feel like.
Yeah, no, I mean, nothing you said was wrong. And I will say, I'm a fan of Deebo Samuel strictly because he wanted for a period of time to be traded because they put him at running back too much. And for every tweet where people are like, just put receivers at running backs, Deebo can serve as a reminder that nobody actually wants to do that. That's
no, absolutely not.
Yeah. No, I mean, Deebo's awesome. Like, he had a down year by his standards last year. Like, that quote's out there. Like, he said he had a horrible year or something like that. Like I said, he was just outside my top 10. And I really have nothing to be like, oh, this is why he wasn't in. Like, I'm with you. He's firmly in that tier of guys who's really, really good. And he's also with the perfect coach. Like, Kyle Shanahan is a Frankenstein of a, offensive scheme guy.
That's definitely true. It's nice that they kind of got married together. But yeah, Deebo and CD are kind of in the same tier. And then I think you and I probably have the same names in the top seven of guys who could be arguably the top receiver in the league.
Do we?
Maybe not. Who's your number seven? Or is it my turn?
We'll hear after these ads.
Okay.
We'll be right back.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
All right, you start with number seven.
Okay. That was a good transition. I completely forgot.
Thank you. Thank you, guys.
All right, just let me know. Should I go now?
Yeah. You just go, yeah.
I don't know if you're off for the ad. All right, my number seven is Cooper Kupp, which I had a hard time finding a spot for him. He was probably the hardest guy for me to rank just because, again, winning the Triple Crown and leading the league in receiving – catches, yards, and touchdowns is just bonkers. Steve Smith did it in 2003, I want to say, and Jerry Rice was probably the last person to do it before him. So, and this past season in 2022, he was still having an outrageous year, both efficiency wise and volume wise. And so he's a slot merchant, and he's a little bit older than some of the other guys on the list. And now the Rams are contenders for the first overall pick, and we're probably in tank mode, or hopefully quick rebuild mode for them. But he's an alpha. He's a number one. So I had to make sure I didn't leave him off the list or even put him in the Deebo tier.
What team is he going to play for next year when Sean McVay retires and develop the team? Tampa.
Tampa? Yeah. What about Godwin? Are they just going to swap?
What about who?
Godwin? Yeah, they're pretty similar players, honestly.
Okay, he's going to play for
crazy long speed, but they're just awesome physical guys in the slot.
He's going to be a Tennessee Titan.
Ooh, that's a good one, actually. Yeah.
That's right. I got A.J. Brown as my seven. I think all these seven guys number ones and our alphas, and A.J. Brown is obviously in the perfect offense for him because it's all go balls and yards after the catch and stuff.
Yeah.
I just feel like one-on-one, I'm probably trusting the other guys on the list to win more consistently. I mean, you calling Cooper Kupp a slot merchant does explain why. He go right into it. He's number six on my list. the other guys I would not call slot merchants. And it's sad that it's a derogatory term. But, I'm sure Cooper Kupp, is more than he's obviously more than just that. But at the end of the day, I think if there's a tier break, it's A.J. Brown and Cooper Kupp. And then, in my opinion, the next five guys on the list. But who's your number six?
Oh, no, I got the same thing. I kind of reacted surprisingly to your A.J. Brown ranking, but I only had him one difference. He's my number six, and Cooper's my number seven. And then you got the two of them flip-flopped at six and seven. So, I think that, they could be in, a tier with, some of the next two or three guys on our list. But I definitely agree that there's a drop-off, after those two names. And, you do have a point with AJ Brown were like, I feel like he could run any route, but he's not asked to run every route. So like, if we're like holding back Cooper Kupp a little bit for like not running outside on the perimeter, then that's fair.
I guess. I know I made the point, but I guess.
All right. My number five is Ja'Marr Chase.
Ooh. Why do you hate Ja'Marr Chase?
Because I have recency bias and haven't seen him play in a few months. Maybe that's it. Or a few months more than the other guys. Fair like, enough. I think he, like Justin Jefferson is kind of, like, in contention, or probably, like, most people would say he's the best receiver in the league, or, like, the best receiver in the league of the future. But I feel like I wouldn't be surprised at all if, like, Ja'Marr Chase, like, overtakes him and has, like, a better career and even better, like, next three seasons. Because he's a freak, but, like, I think it's, like, just, like, the other guys I have on the list have a little bit more production, a little bit more experience, and a little bit more credibility. So, like, you're definitely not going to be wrong for having Ja'Marr higher than me, but that's just where I've got him for right now.
Fair enough. I mean, I got Stephon Diggs there, honestly. I think Stephon Diggs is still going to be really, really good this year, but, you know, he's also the death knell season. I think he's going to be 30 this year. So, I think it's, you know, honestly, it's hard for me to even have Ja'Marr Chase outside the top three because, I mean, he's had stupid production, you know, the last couple years. But that I guess the big thing separating it for me is I think Chase can still get even better this year, whereas I think we've seen the best from Diggs so far. But Diggs is also one of my favorite receivers because he's due to throw a franchise into disarray at any moment. So I'm completely on board with him still being one of the best receivers.
Totally. All right, is it my turn, or do you have three or four?
That's right. I got four. I got Devontae.
Ooh.
Ooh, okay. All the way down at four.
Four. Why do you hate Devontae Adams?
I feel bad for the guy who pushed. No, I
that poor cameraman.
Like I said, it's literally this is more of a Ja'Marr Chase ranking than Devontae Adams ranking because it's literally nothing against Devontae Adams other than the fact that, I mean, he's no longer playing with Aaron Rodgers, but he's still a really good receiver. I mean, his first half against Tyson Campbell last year was like a crazy good performance. And Derek Carr, in my opinion, was not good last year. So he was like putting up like a 100-yard game in the first half without, you know, stellar quarterback play against a really good corner. So he's still obviously really good, but he's not my top three good.
Wow. Okay. My number four is Diggs. I just have him above Chase because in terms of like an argument for one-on-one with them, I think the argument for Diggs is that he's like kind of a one-man show. Like they've had like a rotating door of like supporting cast players in Buffalo, I feel like, between Cole Beasley and John Brown the second time and Gabe Davis, who just like wasn't really healthy last season, Emmanuel Sanders. They just drafted Don Kincaid. But like, obviously, Josh Allen is like reason number one for how good Buffalo has been the past few years, but Diggs is easily number two. He's just put up like such insane volume stats and is like so clearly like the like what makes that offense go and like the key to it basically. So, and like, I heard someone talking, I think it was Steven Ruiz on the Ringer pod, like, even when he faces the Patriots, like Bill Belichick like can't figure out a way to stop him, and like Belichick is like known for like being able to bracket receivers and like shut down opposing offenses like best weapon, and he still hasn't figured it out against Diggs. And like even since he was in Minnesota, like I've always been a huge advocate for him because I thought he was like underrated then, and so now I'm just trying to give him his flowers before he like gets on the wrong side of 30.
Anybody who hit on him coming out of Maryland should like never shut up, because I remember like there were people who were big fans of him, you know, coming out of college, and I personally can't remember watching him at all or having any take on him. But like you said, the kind of receiver he's been, you know, since the Minnesota days, like, you know, I remember the arguments of like him against Thielen and me. I always lean Diggs just because, I mean, he seems so much cooler, and so what. Do you buy credence to the idea that obviously neither one of us follows Buffalo very much, but I guess from, you know, the media reports and stuff, his problem in Buffalo is like basically Ken Dorsey and his role in the offense. Here's my question to you. Is that because Gabriel Davis is awful? UCF doesn't claim him. I don't claim him for UCF.
He had a high sprain last year. Like, he'll be fine. I guess he had some like gruesome drops, but like, I think he can like still last in the league for a couple more years. It's not like he's that bad.
I wanted him to take a receiver. I don't love the Kincaid pick.
Yeah, neither do I. Like, they got two receivers last year, I think, but they were just like small slot guys who haven't really done much.
Fair enough. All right, who's your number three?
My number three is Tyreek Hill.
Ooh.
Yeah. I don't really like, he's very fast. I don't really know what to say here. Like, he's just been one of the best receivers for at least 5 years now. And the like credit to him for being able to switch systems and go from one of the best deep throwers in the league to one of the worst. Which, like, I saw that like Next Gen Stats had like a bunch of articles for like their best players at each position. So like, or they did best deep throwers for quarterbacks, and Tua was like, I think he was top five, but he was definitely on the list, which is just hilarious because like, sure, he had like good stats from throwing deep, but like there was so many ducks and like he had to throw so early, like after he got the ball, in order to like give the receivers just time to run under it. So it was funny to see like Tua marked as a good deep passer, but it's like Tyreek Hill just like solves it regardless.
Yeah, I mean, I don't disagree with you. I had Chase three, and then going to number two, I had Tyreek Hill. Like, I think, you know, them and obviously who I'm expecting us both to, you know, probably have number one are, I think, the three, like, most dangerous receivers in football. I think, like, Chase is just pretty much impossible to cover, like, on, you know, vertical routes unless you devote several guys in coverage to him. Like, he dictates entire coverages, and I will take the complete L on him. I thought he was good coming out of LSU. I never thought for a second that he was going to be like one of the best receivers in the NFL. And that was completely me being an idiot because he's obviously, you know, supremely gifted. And like, I think T. Higgins is really good. Like, T. Higgins probably after Debo is like the next guy I would have put like in this top 10.
Yeah.
And he still is like obviously the better receiver than T. Higgins. So,
yeah, he's just like so different. It's like he moves different. He like just makes everything look so much easier than it is, and like moves at a different speed. And yeah,
and he's still really young too.
Yeah, what do you think he is? Like 22?
What's your guess? He's like 22. Shows you the research that we do here at the Jaguar Report podcast. But my intuition is that he's 22 or 23.
He turned 23 in March.
See, so if you're listening to this in February, he was 22.
What? All right. If you got a time travel guy, you got to hook me up because I don't know how that would happen. But is it – whose turn is it?
It's your turn. Give me your number two. It's Davante Adams, huh?
It's Justin Jefferson.
Yeah, okay. Wow.
All right. Well, I'm just going to like spoil it a little bit and say that I've – Davante Adams at one. And so, like, anyone that puts Jefferson at one and Adams at two is like not wrong in my book. But the reason for me is I just feel like the number one player at the position is kind of like a hill that you stay on for a while, and like you can't just like get knocked off that easily. Like, I just feel like Tay is like the best receiver of the past 7 or 8 years since Julio. Like, it goes like Calvin Johnson, Julio, Davante Adams for like best receiver in the league crowns. So I feel like having the number one rank is like something you just like don't take or give up very easily. And like, I fully expect Justin Jefferson to take it this year if he hasn't already. But like, this is just like me giving Davante Adams his flowers, I guess.
That's fair enough. I personally think Jefferson took it last year. Like, I think he's already an MVP type player at position, but Davante Adams is ridiculously good. There's literally like no drop off in his play going from Throw Rogan to Derek Carr last year.
You don't think it was Hall of Fame to Hall of Fame?
And if Davante Adams like puts up outrageous numbers with Jimmy G this year, then I'll concede to you that he's still the king. But I don't know. I just give Justin a side
bet here is because like I don't expect him to be the king. Like if we do these rankings again next offseason, because I'm like I don't really have enough. I had enough trust in Derek Carr, and that was fine. But I don't have enough trust in Jimmy G, especially now with like the recent injury concerns that have popped up. But I do have some stats back in my argument. Since Jefferson entered the league in 2020, Adams still ranks first in targets, receptions, and touchdowns, and second in yards behind only Jefferson. But that's yards is the only stat that Jefferson is top three in over the past 3 years.
The most important stat.
Well, then last year, Jefferson was first in targets, or no, receptions and yards on his way to Offensive Player of the Year. But Adams still had more touchdowns than him and any other wide receiver. So, like, kind of similar to, like, my Terry and CeeDee argument. Like, their production is, like, pretty similar. And so then, like, I'm just keeping Adams on top until he's, like, definitely off of it.
You and your numbers.
I'm just trying to – I got good arguments. I'm trying to win this poll. Okay?
You do make good arguments. I have a question for you.
Okay.
If the Jaguars would have drafted Justin Jefferson in 2020, would they have still finished with the worst record in the NFL?
No.
No. So I don't think he would have swung a game?
Yeah. Like, I think, like, if you did, like, a multiverse video of, like, Jaguars, like, where things could branch off in history, if they selected Justin Jefferson over Kalon Chaisson in 2020, then that, like, changes the whole trajectory of the franchise.
See, I think they still finished with the worst record. Yeah. I think they finished with the same record. But
I'm not going to argue against it. They were not a real NFL team.
I don't know, man. I love Jefferson, but I don't know if he swings a full game. I remember thinking when they were on the clock that he was going to be the pick, and there was plenty of smoke around it. And then you hear LSU and – then a bunch of ringing noises, sirens going off, alarms, etc. And here we are today. So we will be right back after this next ad. Just bear with us. We'll be right back. All right, guys. We gave our top 10 list. We'll leave it up to the people, the listeners, to decide who's the reigning ranking champion. Mm-hmm. For now, I still have the belt around my chiseled waist.
Okay, yeah, hold on for now.
Yeah, okay. Well, why don't you tell us what we got next?
All right, I'm trying to look up some Jefferson stats.
Oh god, let it go. Let it go.
You would have given them a win.
Let it go.
Our second segment for today is what could go right and what could go wrong for the Jaguars in 2023.
I know what could go wrong for us, and that was for me to ask that Justin Jefferson question. You are obsessed, my friend.
I've got
Let's hear it. I know, because I know we won't be able to move on. Let's hear it.
I was trying to find a war statistic for his rookie year, and I couldn't find it. So we're going to move on. The first thing I have for the offensive side of the ball for what could go wrong is the offensive line doesn't hold up. Both in terms of like setting protection and then like short distance. And so I feel like the Jags like went lengths to improve both aspects, like both in like getting better like short yardage running backs and then getting like a great pass protecting prospect in Anton Harrison to replace Juwan Taylor. But like last year in both games against the Chiefs, honestly, but especially in the playoff game when they lost, like protection against Steve Spagnuolo's blitzes was pretty key. Like there was a couple like free rushers and Lawrence was under pressure for a lot of the game. And then like the short distance stuff is just like something that's like almost like not super similar to fumbles, but like fumbles are like kind of just like a luck of the draw for like where it bounces and how lucky you are to recover them. And so like short distance can kind of be like a luck factor, kind of like red zone, or just in that it's like kind of goes up and down from year to year. But like in terms of just like flaws that the offense can have, like, and I'm just nitpicking, like short short yardage situations if the offensive line can and can't hold up is like a potential shortcoming in my eyes.
Yeah, no, I think that's absolutely fair. I said on an interview on a different podcast earlier, and I think like the Jaguars short yardage stuff, especially their goal line running, isn't looking good after like the first quarter or season. I don't think Doug Peterson will be afraid to, you know, make some kind of change, whether it's a, you know, change the formula on the offensive line, maybe let Tank Bigsby get more run in those situations. I still think it's like they got really lucky, in my opinion, with injuries last year at the skill positions. Like, other than a handful of games from, you know, Zay and Kirk, like their receiver depth really did not get tested until, you know, the Kansas City game when we saw Christian Kirk get hurt late and Jamal Agnew ends up going in a spot. Agnew ends up having, you know, that game deciding fumble. It was in short because it was such a top heavy receiver room. I guess now the question is, you know, adding Calvin Ridley to the mix, how much can that help them kind of sustain that depth? Because it's hard. We saw with 2017, 2018 squads, it's hard to be super healthy 2 years in a row.
Definitely. Yeah. Like we said it before, health is a pretty major storyline for the Jags this year. I like wrote that down originally and then didn't bring it up just because like I feel like you could say injury as an excuse for like anything, but like you are right to point out like the depth there. So it's a fair point.
Like I obviously, you know, the hype, everything's moving positively for Trevor Lawrence, but have we seen a game yet where, okay, Trevor Lawrence, go win a game where Tim Jones is one of your starting receivers? You know, no, like I'm being serious.
Oh, I was trying to think back to his rookie season if that happened.
Okay, that doesn't count. We don't talk about those. We don't talk about that year.
We're not time traveling back there.
No. I'd rather never think about that year again. Hated it.
All right, well, back to 2023.
Let's hear it.
Is there another thing you have for like what could go wrong for the offense?
Like you said, offensive line, like I think really the interior offensive line, like getting the left guard position settled. Like, is it going to be Tyler Shatley? Is it going to be Ben Bartsch? Is it going to be Walker Little when Cam Robinson comes back? Because it really doesn't seem like they're going to keep Cam Robinson's contract like off the field. And then, you know, obviously the other two positions, center, Luke Fortner, you know, he looks like he has, you know, the players that you wanted to see, you know, get stronger and get bigger. He looks like he has done that. Coaches say that, you know, he's gotten stronger this offseason, but it won't be until the season starts that we really see. And then Brandon Scherff, yeah, it seems like he's the guy everybody nationally like wants to likes to ding on the offensive line. I think PFF said he gave up 6 sacks last year, which is the most he gave up, but I don't know. He had like a few down moments, but I still feel like run blocking wise, he really opened up a lot for them. So I still feel like he's kind of the consistent part of the line.
I agree. I feel like it was just like a less consistent season than he's had in the past, but like it's fair because he's getting older, and to his credit, he did finish the full season. So yeah, he's like definitely like what makes the running game go. And like, he's kind of like used as a weapon in the running game, like the run against the Chargers, like the James Robinson 60 yarder when Scherff pulled around. So he's definitely a pretty key piece.
100%.
The only other thing I had written down was Trevor gets in a funk, which I don't really expect to happen since he proved he can get out of it twice last year. Like once it was like a season funk, like he had the bad Broncos game in London and that was a stretch of some not great games. And then he turned it around for the second half of the season. And then against the Chargers in a single game sample, throwing 4 interceptions in 1 half and then throwing 4 straight touchdowns. So like, if he gets in a funk, like I don't think it'll be too much of a problem for him to get out of it. But like, I feel like all young quarterbacks, as great as they are, can get into a funk.
Are the Jaguars good enough to win with Trevor Lawrence in a funk?
The majority of games, yeah, I would say so.
Yeah. Okay.
Interesting. I think unless like the opposing defense also happens to have like a great run defense.
Yeah.
I mean, like, the Jags offense can't get anything going, and there'd be some concern. Or if they're just going up against a great offense and the defense, or like the Jags can't keep up. But I would say, like, more than 50% of games, like, they would still have a solid chance of winning.
Fair enough.
As like 200, 250 yards.
Fair enough.
But again, I don't really, like, expect that to happen. I'm just, I'm considering to nitpick because.
No, I've made a mental note that that's exactly what you expect to happen. No. And I'm going to hold it against you.
No.
Yeah, the pain on your face.
I'm writing it down, and I know you're not writing it down, so we'll see if that mental note pops back up.
Yeah? Yeah, the notepad of the century. Yeah.
John's threatening me by holding up his phone for the
That's right.
YouTube watchers.
That's right.
All right, so for what could go right on offense, Calvin Ridley.
That I'll be honest, I think Travis Etienne can be a lot better this year. That seems like the consensus when you talk to the coaches in the building. Like Doug Peterson mentioned it at the combine. He was like, basically, you know, we could have our running backs in general be better about hitting the holes we're designed to hit, you know, running with vision and stuff. And then again, you know, in OTAs, they've talked about how much better they expect Etienne to be. It almost seems like even though he had, you know, the 1,500 yards from scrimmage last year, they're like, it was an okay, you know, season, which is it was his first NFL season, you know, and there was I remember his first preseason game. It was like, okay, things are moving way too fast for this dude. It slowed down as the season went. He hit those big runs. But you can definitely tell that there's still some more maturation needed. And, you know, they think it's happened so far this offseason. I think if it has, that can help be the answer to, you know, can they win if Trevor Lawrence ever gets in the funk?
Right. I think he's probably progressed better health or physical-wise as well as, like, mentally. True. Like, hopefully he'll be able to, like, the game will slow down for him and he'll be able to hit holes more better. But, like, in terms of his health, I feel like for a lot of major injuries to your leg, like, it takes, like, 2 years or, like, the second season returning from the injury, not just the first season, to, like, really seem like you're back to yourself. And I feel like Etienne's, like, acceleration was definitely there last year, but, like, he broke off one 50-plus yard touchdown, I think, against the Texans in, like, week 16. And so he definitely had, like, plenty of other, like, huge gains, but it wasn't necessarily, like, the true breakaway speed that we saw at Clemson. And so I think, like, just all around, he could get better, and I agree he's in for a big year. I feel like we're talking about health as a storyline. Like, I feel like I heard Chad Muma and Devin Lloyd, and I feel like someone else talk at minicamp about how, like, their bodies – just like wore down over the course of the NFL season because it's such a long season compared to college. And so I feel like that might have happened a little bit with ETN. And so my point is that like Tank Bigsby could almost be like a positive to ETN's production just to like be someone to give him rest. And so that ETN can have like a not like workhorse workload, but a big workload with like crazy efficiency.
Yeah, and that's fair. I mean, I really don't expect Tank to eat in the ETN's carries like that, dude. I was on a fantasy podcast earlier, and they said some people are taking Tank like in the third round of fantasy drafts. And I'm like, bro, what are y'all doing?
They must have meant Dynasty, because that would be crazy. That's like where ETN is.
I didn't ask.
You just smile and wave, huh?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
All right, so like ETN could kind of have a jump, not just Trevor, and then as long as Calvin is what we expect, like,
and I mean, I feel like we're both expecting Trevor Lawrence to just like improve in year three. Like, is there any reason to think that he doesn't?
No.
Yeah, like I think he's going to be much better this year than he was last year, which is still wild because last year he had one of the best seasons in the franchise's, you know, history at the position.
Like, you already expect young players to get better after each year, but quarterbacks specifically have, like, a significant jump in year three more than any other year, I believe. And then it's also, like, year two with Peterson, and it's, like, the first time Lawrence will have, like, two consecutive seasons in one system since Clemson or maybe even high school, honestly. So, like, the continuity is huge, and then, like, going into year three is huge, and then getting an alpha receiver, like, we've seen how big of an impact it's been for, like, Josh Allen, Stephon Diggs, Jalen Hurts, A.J. Brown, plenty of other examples, I'm sure. So, yeah, definitely expecting a jump.
Fair enough. Fair enough. No, defense. I mean, what – I really think the best thing, like, you know, starting with best case scenario is that they once again are like a super turnover lucky defense. Like, I don't think you can ever count on turnovers like year to year to carry over. Like, we saw 2017, how many turnovers they generated. And then the next year, the defense was still really good. They just weren't nearly as lucky, and they generated, like, I think, like a third of the turnovers and takeaways. Yeah. I think that's like the best possible path for them this year, is to just generate those takeaways. Like Rayshon Jenkins, as much as he did last year, Tyson Campbell, you know, Darius Williams hasn't had an interception in two seasons, which is kind of wild. And it felt like the Jets game alone, he could have had three last year. So maybe converting on some of those.
Yeah.
Andre Sisco, like Cody Graham, the safeties coach, even said, he was like, if Sisco caught a couple of the passes he didn't intercept last year, he would have had like a Pro Bowl, like numbers and stuff. So just stuff like that, I think, is probably the best case scenario what could lift them.
I would say on top of that, like just the development from second year players and young players, because I feel like Jaguars brass has been beating that drum the whole offseason about, like, especially since like people were criticizing them about like the lack of additions on defense.
Yeah.
But like they keep talking about how much they're relying on like their young players to continue growing. And like, didn't they even like count Foyer as a second year player?
Oh, yeah, 100%.
So like, I don't know how much he'll really get better since he's led the league in tackles back to back years, but like Trayvon Walker, Devin Lloyd, Chad Muma, Andre Sisco. I also don't know how much better Tyson Campbell can really get, but he's another young player who could keep taking a step. So, like, they're going to need, like, true development from Trayvon Walker and Devin Lloyd. And then if Lloyd is awesome and if Sisco is awesome, that's kind of a cherry on top.
That, to me, like, goes right into, like, the negatives. Like, what could happen that they don't fulfill their potential is if Trayvon and Devin, you know, don't each take a leap, or even if a combination, like having one of them to take a leap, it wouldn't be great, but you could live with it. But if neither one of them does, like that, like I don't know if they could stomach that. I get Chad Muma's insurance, but they need Devin Lloyd to be more than just a linebacker.
Definitely. He's like, I feel like the most conflicting player on defense, or like, I don't know. It's easy to say Trayvon Walker is the X factor, but just like, I feel like Devin Lloyd has such a wide range of outcomes that could happen this coming season that could like sway the defense so much.
Who's more likely to take the lead this year?
I would say definitely Trayvon, but also like Trayvon almost needs to take a leap to like an above average slash great player. Whereas Devin Lloyd, I feel like if he just makes a leap to an average slash above average player, like, the weakness is like you can't be a problem. That's really what I'm asking from him.
You're literally just asking for him to be able to line up.
Yeah. Okay. That brings me to my other point of like what could go wrong, which is finishing in terms of that's one of my other points. But for the depth point, like having no weaknesses is what I'm trying to say. Like we've talked about depth a lot this offseason with like kind of the questions at edge rusher and cornerback, and I think we're gonna like mostly forget about that during the regular season. But then like the playoffs is like, what could go wrong in the playoffs is like, oh, like they're playing like elite quarterbacks and elite play callers who know how to exploit each tiny weakness. Because I feel like defense is more about like not having a weak link than it is having like just a couple monstars. So kind of fixing up those weak links at edge and then linebacker with Lloyd and then cornerback for the playoffs is going to be big.
I really think that like outside of those guys that we talked about not taking a leap and outside of what you said, I think more than ever they need Josh Allen to be like that like top seven pick that he was.
A dude.
But they need him more this year, and I think they did last year, which is wild to say.
Yeah, I think he's another guy who's like interesting to talk about in terms of like the jump he can make and like how much more he could really go. Because I feel like he could ascend to like the number five edge rusher in the league. It's just a matter of like doing it consistently.
He is a fascinating case because he's both extremely, in my opinion, criminally underrated and also not as good as he should be, which should not make any sense. But like to me, he's like a top 15 edge in the NFL. Like he's a good run defender. you know, he gets good pressure numbers. His sacks obviously aren't great, but, you know, snap the snap, he's impactful. But you look at him, like I said, you look at the pressure numbers, you look at his traits, what he does against the run, and you ask, why isn't he getting, you know, double-digit sacks? But I also think, like, a lot of Jags fans think that he's not even, like, a top, like, 30, you know, edge rusher, when he's clearly very good.
Yeah, I would say he's easily top 20, and I would agree that he's top 15. I feel like it's interesting because he and Trayvon are, like, not similar at all in terms of, like, their plan with the pass rush, where Trayvon, like, needs to develop something other than a bull rush. But, like, Allen actually has, like, a pretty wide array of moves. And so, again, it's just a matter of, like, putting it together a lot more consistently and not just showing flashes in year 4 and 5.
Who has the third most sacks on the team this year, assuming Allen and Trayvon have the first two?
Roy Robertson-Harris.
Okay.
I think Caleb and Yasir, like, both have potential, like, make noise and, like, rack up a handful and, like, be solid contributors. But I feel like they're also, like, designated pass rushers who, like, could easily end the season with, like, one or two or zero sacks.
Put it on the board. You expect a career year from Caleb on Chase on. Put it on the dang board.
Who do you got at three?
Von Hamilton.
Ooh.
Yeah. Breakout year as a pass rusher.
Honestly, but yeah.
Breakout year as a pass rusher. And then we can rank our favorite sacks of the four that he records.
All right, that's a plan. Yeah. The finishing point I was going to make was the last one. It's just like in terms of what could go wrong. Like last year, the Jags had a really good pressure rate and not a good sack rate. So finishing in terms of bringing down quarterbacks, but also in terms of just bringing down ball carriers in general, because like Rayshon was like had the second most missed tackles in the league, and Devin Lloyd wasn't far behind him, and Foye I think had a decent amount too. And then I feel like Cisco didn't have like a ton in terms of numbers, but I feel like he's similar to Rayshon in terms of like they play so fast, like they easily just like whiz by guys sometimes.
Yeah,
so cleaning up like missed tackles and then converting pressures to sacks is like a big thing that could sway the defense either like right or wrong.
I don't have the exact number on hand, but when assistant coaches did their media day, you know, interviews and stuff. Yeah. Brinson Buckner said they missed over 20 sacks last year. And he implied that a good chunk of those were Trayvon Walker. So, and he was like, if they get half of those, nobody's asking me about, you know, pass rush, which fair enough. Fair enough.
All right, so Trayvon Walker, minus 20 sacks under Buckner expectation.
I'm not going to answer that. I'm not going
to. I need a good expected stat for you a little bit.
Yeah, yeah, okay. Well, you got any parting hot takes for us?
No, I don't think so. I feel like my hot take was probably just Terry McLaurin is a top 10 receiver.
Did you have a hot take this episode? I'm not going to force you to have one.
I didn't set one up, so I'm not going to force it since we're writing them down now.
Okay.
I'll say something about Terry McLaurin. I'll say.
You don't have to.
Yeah, no. Yeah. I'm going to bring it up randomly next offseason.
Yeah, no. Yeah, no. You can keep it, holster it, come back with one
next month.
No pressure.
Two for the next podcast.
No pressure, but yeah, definitely have a hot take next week. I can't. Well, I'm John Shipley. Gus, you got anything to say before we head out?
See you next time.